I joined the Porgy and Bess cast in Montreal. I rehearsed in the afternoons and observed the company from the wings at night. As the pastel lights illuminated the set, it was as though the singers really were from the dirt roads of Catfish Row. Even though I'd seen it before and would see it many more times, Porgy's tragic love for Bess never failed to make me cry. The singers, on the other hand, as soon as they came off stage, seemed to step out of the roles as easily as one kicks off two large slippers.
Hey, girl. How do you like it?
I absolutely love it, but I don't understand how you can play those emotions every night without being destroyed.
It's called show business. You'll get used to it.
We were in Montreal only a further 4 days before the company was bound for Italy. 2 children, 60 adults, and all their paraphernalia descended on the airport like an invading horde of Goths on ancient Rome. On the plane, the stewardesses fielded our requests. The sopranos complained.
This cold air will ruin my voice.
The baritones complained.
It's too hot. My vocal cords are dry as the desert.
And as for the tenors...
If you haven't got a rock and rye, I'll settle for clover honey and fresh lemon juice.
Dazed and wild-eyed, the cabin crew withdrew to the front of the plane and ignored our persistent demands. When the plane touched down, my excitement surged at the incredible turn of events. I, Marguerite Johnson, was really in Italy, in a town made famous by one of the world's greatest writers.
Verona! That sign said Verona, the home of the Montagues and the Capulets. This is the land of Shakespeare.
The guide already told us, Ma. Weren't you listening?
The Everyman Opera Company goes to the tremendous expense of hiring a guide, and Ali Dancer doesn't even listen to him.
This is where Romeo fell in love with Juliet.
Maya, in the next year, you'll probably be in the place where Hamlet died, where Othello killed Desdemona, or where Cleopatra did herself in with an asp. Promise me that you're not going to get this excited every single time.
The opening night of our European tour was a smash hit. And the audience loved us. If Italy declared us acceptable, we could have the rest of Europe for a song. Our confidence was to be tested later at the world-famous La Scala Opera House because Porgy and Bess was the first American opera ever to be sung there. Our nerves would give way to smiles and tears as the audience got on its feet yelling and applauding. But for now... we were in Venice, for which neither books nor films had prepared me. It was an object of art in itself.
When you were in New York, did you ever imagine yourself gliding along a canal in a gondola?
It's wonderful, isn't it, Martha? The moon shines bright in such a night as this.
Here she goes.
Then the sweet wind did gently kiss the trees, and they did make no noise in such a night.
It's not yet night, Miss Angelou. It's broad daylight, and it seems we've drawn an audience.
What are they looking at?
What do you think they're looking at? Us?
A crowd of people had gathered by the bank of the canal. You'd think they'd never seen 3 black women on a gondola before.
Bye, you speak Italian. Tell them to go away.
I'm learning Italian. I intend to speak every language of every country we go to.
They think we're animals in a cage. Why don't they just throw peanuts at us?
If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die?
What are they doing now?
They appeared to be shooing us away with their hands.
God, how humiliating.
Oh, ladies, they're not shooing us away.
As we neared the group of Italians, their smiles became evident.
Well, I'll be. They recognize us from the show.
They were welcoming us to Venice, and Martha and Lillian were more than happy to be recognized. In Belgrade, no one stared at us. We were being studiously and politely ignored. The hotel staff must have undergone intensive indoctrination. We were certainly the only real guests. The others who averted their eyes or buried their heads in newspapers on our approach, seemed less innocent than Peter Lorre in an Eric Ambler spy movie. The company was told that the Yugoslav government and the American State Department wished us to be discreet. We were, after all, guests of the country and the first American singers to be invited behind the Iron Curtain. We could only walk within 4 square blocks of the hotel. We were not to accept invitations from any Yugoslavians, nor were we to initiate fraternization. The show was a huge success and sold out, but at the Moskva Hotel...
Would you look at this? There's only one bed.
I was to share dressing and hotel rooms with the great soprano, Martha Flowers.
This is what these people got out of their revolution?
Also rooming with us was the singer Lillian Heyman, a cello to Martha's violin.
I'm so tired, I'm past caring.
A few nights later, after our performance...
Answer it, Maya.
Hello?
Is this Mistress Maya Angelou?
Yes, I am Maya Angelou.
I'm Mistress Maya. I'm being Mr. Julian. It's that tonight I'm seeing you dance. I'm watching you leap across the stage and looking at your legs jumping through the air. And Mistress Maya, I am loving you.
Who is it, Maya?
If you are hearing a man is throwing his body into the Danube today and dying in the icy water, that man is being me. Drowning for the love of you. You and your lovely legs jumping.
Who is this?
I'm being Mr. Julian, and I am loving you.
Yes, well, Mr. Julian, why would loving me make you want to die?
Make him promise to die before sundown so we can get a little sleep.
Look, mister...
May I please be taking you to one expensive cafe and watching your lovely lips drinking down coffee with cream?
I am sorry, but I have to hang up now.
Oh, hang up or down, just let me go to sleep.
Miss Maya, if you are not seeing me, if you are not letting me see your lips drinking down coffee with cream, then today I'm sending you my heart.
What?
I'm sending you in a package my heart.
No, Mr. Julian, don't send me your heart. I don't want it.
Tell him to send you his tongue so he'll shut up.
Mrs. Maya, it is that I'm sending it to your theater by hand this morning. Goodbye, lovely legs leaping.
During my Serbo-Croat lessons, I'd been told of the passion of Yugoslavian men who gladly mutilated themselves to demonstrate their sincerity. But I thought no one, not even in fiction, would cut their own heart out. And then I remembered...
The Japanese samurai. They get their friends to help them commit ritual self-murder. What if Mr. Julian...
Shut up, Maya!
The next day, I was informed that someone had left a package in the dressing room for me.
Go on in. Open it.
Oh, he did it, didn't he? He actually cut his heart out and sent it to me.
I imagined a bloody organ still pumping like a prop in The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, thank the Lord. Oh.
A cake?
Oh, it's just a decoration.
It had bits of plate glass and dried flowers mixed in with tatters of lace and barley and wheat.
What's the note say?
Mistress Maya, here is my heart. I am loving you. Goodbye, my lovely legs. Mr. Julian.
Look, there's a little hook. Why don't you hang it on the wall?
Now. Doesn't that look pretty?
And that's where it's staying. Forever.
You're not taking it with you when we leave?
Most definitely not.
The Yugoslavia trip put an unusual pressure on us all. We boarded the fabled Orient Express, and my friends and I nestled down, anxious for the train to move. Suddenly...
Mr. Smile!
We looked up to see a short, wizened old man... standing in the doorway of the compartment.
I'm wishing you joy, happiness, and victory.
With that, he threw a package in my lap.
Oh!
Slammed the door and leapt off the train.
That was Mr. Julian?
Well, at least open the poor man's present.
What is it?
Three guesses.
Don't tell me.
Mr. Julius Hart.
Bound for the African continent, our train plowed through the changing landscapes. In one night, we passed from bleak winter to spring. I looked out of the window to see children playing joyously in the fields, and the sudden longing for my son threatened to engulf me.
Excuse me. Are you all right, Maya?
Yeah, I just need some fresh air.
Our journey continued on board a ship bound for Alexandria in Egypt. As it neared land, tall white buildings framed the shoreline. I fantasized about the Africans who designed them and tried to distinguish the differences between they who had not been bought, sold, or stolen and my people, who were still enduring a painful diaspora. In Cairo, although black-skinned people held positions of authority, beggars hounded our footsteps. Self-rule had not yet affected the lives of the poor, and much remained to be done. One evening outside our hotel...
Hurry up, Ma, we're going to be late.
Who's giving the dog potty anyway?
A very wealthy Arab.
He and his family were seated in the royal box at the opera house last night. Didn't you see him?
Is this for us?
It looks like it.
Madame, your carriage awaits. The performance last night was exquisite.
We were driven to a large lighted villa in Heliopolis.
Ladies, no. Please, do not alight from the buggies. The mud will ruin your shoes.
Ali! Ah, come!
Two men emerged from the shadows, bowing and touching their foreheads and chests like extras in a bad Hollywood film. They were as black as the night which closed in on us.
These servants will carry each of you to the house.
What?
We couldn't
possibly.
No, we'll walk, thank you.
But ladies...
It is rather muddy.
But we enjoy walking.
In mud.
Yes, we enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Ladies, please. Look at your feet. My maids will help you to clean it up.
Hey, come now.
How do we get out of this?
We couldn't possibly. Just give us the towels and we'll do it ourselves.
In our culture, it is bad manners to refuse the hospitality of the host.
And the auction blocks and whipping posts were too recent in our history for us to be comfortable around slavish servants. We left Egypt undeniably changed. The exposure to extreme wealth and shocking poverty forced the frivolous to be level-headed and encouraged the sober to enjoy what they had taken for granted. I received a letter from Mother. She had got a job in Las Vegas, and there was no one to take care of Clyde, who missed me more than ever.
When are you coming home, Mother?
I knew what it was to feel abandoned, and I had promised I'd never leave him.
Oh, Clyde.
Fluke says that you like it so much out there that you're never coming back. He's lying, isn't he?
I missed my son, and he needed me. The time had come to go home.